broadcasting live from the RNR studios in Las Vegas, Nevada. It's the premier destination for an inside look into the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, presented by Tequila Embajador.
What is good, Raider Nation? Welcome back to Raider Nation Radio, 9:20 a.m. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador. Big day for the WNBA and the Las Vegas Aces. Yes, that is under the Raiders, umbrella. It's the draft. It's the WNBA draft, and the Las Vegas Aces, who Mark Davis and the Raiders own, have the 12th and 14th pick overall. So everybody's busy trying to nail down a big draft. The Aces are really popular here in Las Vegas. I know Mark Davis. It means a lot to him. It means a lot to the Raiders. It means a lot to this community. And so getting their, putting their best foot forward is obviously very, very important. And today's a big day. Anytime you're adding some new players and trying to figure out, to create the best path moving forward, the draft is always an important day. And I know talking to some of the people over at the Aces, Bill Laimbeer, the head coach, is walking around pulling his hair out in anxiety about how tonight is going to unfold. We are going to keep our eye on that. I'm a big WNBA fan. And now moving to Las Vegas, I'm definitely rooting for the Aces. So I want to know exactly what they're going to do and what the rest of the what is really a growing sports league in the WNBA across the country. I tell people all the time that level of play is for real. There's some talent in the WNBA, as is there, obviously in college basketball and high school basketball as well. It just keeps getting better and better and better and better, just like all sports do. So keeping an eye on that, keeping an eye on the Raiders. A couple of big moves out from the facility in Henderson today. And unfortunately, it came at the expense of a couple of veteran defensive linemen. We all know the Raiders really beefed up on the defensive line during free agency. They understood that it just wasn't working in terms of depth, in terms of versatility, in terms of production, in terms of talent. So they went out and signed Yannick Ngakoue. They went out and signed Quinton Jefferson. They went out and signed Solomon Thomas. They went out and signed Darius Filon. They brought back David Irving. They brought back Carl Nassib on a restructured contract. But it left, I think there were 15 players as of this morning on the defensive line. We all know that you can't have a team with 15 defensive linemen. So they had to create some room and they had to thin it out. And unfortunately, it came at the expense of Maurice Hurst and Arden Key, both of whom were released today. I know that that goes back to the 2018 draft. The last draft with Reggie McKenzie as the general manager, that essentially closes the book almost, I should say, because, Colton Miller is still here from that 2018 draft. And now, there's not much to show for that draft without question. And that's part of the reason, a lot of the drafting by Reggie McKenzie, I know that obviously he hit, with Khalil Mack, I should say, I think with the fourth overall pick in his draft, and Amari Cooper, the wide receiver from Alabama, was considered a hit. But in and around that, other than that, it was pretty dire straits for Reggie, and that's why the Raiders have had to completely overhaul the roster these last 3 years. Go look at the numbers of those drafts, and it's not just who isn't on the Raiders, it's who's not even in the NFL anymore. Not to point any fingers, it is what it is. The Raiders are, a work in progress. This roster has been completely overhauled, essentially, since 2018 when John Gruden arrived, and then 2019 when Mike Mayock got here. But work needs to be done, and that's what the draft is for. That's what the continued free agency is all about. And so we'll see where all that is headed. We're to go right out to the Raiders listener line, and Gangster Raider is here, wants to talk about the Raiders. How you doing, Gangster Raider?
Hey, I'm all right. First of all, I want to thank you for giving my brother a shout out a couple of weeks when I called and told y'all about him passing. I really appreciate that. What I want to talk about today, though, is I want to say I'm glad we cut the players that got cut. You know, we need to cut those. We got to get rid of the fat so we can bring in better players, which we look like we have done. But also I want to say I think we need to stop giving out certain numbers until players earn them, like Abram. He shouldn't be wearing 24 because he haven't lived up to it. I think we just gave it out too easy. Certain numbers that shouldn't be given out, 24, 42, and 52, and 21. Should not just be given out. Them numbers should be earned. You know what I'm saying? And I think 24, we need to let him wear number 19 until he earns 24. You know what I mean? Same with 42. I don't think Littleton deserves to wear 42. And I don't think Carl Joseph deserves to wear it unless he earns a starting role and becomes that free safety that we need him to be. You understand what I'm saying? And so I don't think we have a 21 currently. I might be mistaken, but 21, that's another number that needs to be earned. You know what I mean? We shouldn't just give out certain numbers. They need to be earned by these players that show they proved to live up to the standards. And 52 is obviously because, you know, Khalil Mack, who you just mentioned. You know what I'm saying? So I just think
I understand where you're coming from with that, but unless it's you know, unless those numbers are retired, they're free game. And I look at it a little bit differently. You know, either the guy is going to sink or swim, right? You're either going to live up to the number, or you're not. I do respect guys who at least accept that challenge. You know, like Jonathan Abram, the book's not closed on Jonathan Abram. He's had one full season.
That's why I say make him earn it. Just make him wear 19, like for half the season. If he plays up, then he gets to wear 24 for the second half of the season. You know, so I'm not.
I mean, who decides that though? Like, you know, I mean, I think it should come with, you know, I think if a guy like Jonathan Abram, you know, steps foot in the building and says, "Hey, I want number 24." You know what that number means here, right? Yes, I do. All right. Well, you get it. Now it's on you to live up to it. I mean, if you go like to USC and look at number, I think it's 55. All the great linebackers mm-hmm. that have worn number 55. Mm-hmm. They don't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not. They don't. You know, they don't tell somebody, "Nah, man, you're not getting number 55 until you earn it." Guys step in as true freshmen wearing number 55, and they either sink or swim.
I bet you they earned it in practice. I bet you they earned it in practice or in 2-a-day. They wasn't just giving it. You understand what I'm saying? You certain numbers you have to earn either through the coach's respect or by being voted by the team.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
I hear what you're saying. It's not, I understand what you're saying, but, you know, I think, you know, I don't know. I think if you draft somebody in the first round, you're pretty much telling them, "Hey, we have a lot of high hopes for you. What number do you want? This is the number. You know that it comes with some history and some pressure to live up to. Okay, you're cool with that. All right, now go earn it." And they're either going to do it or they're not. So I understand where you're coming from. I really do. And maybe guys need to think a little longer about what numbers they put on. Or they take, because there's certain challenges and pressure that comes with living up to certain numbers. So, you know, I think guys need to be taught a little bit, but I don't know. I don't feel like coaches should
all
be
right,
worried
one more,
about.
One
hey,
more thing
we're not gonna,
about
we're not
the
gonna,
draft.
What's that?
One more thing about the draft.
Yeah.
I think we should get the linebacker. His name just slipped from me.
Micah Parsons.
Yeah, I think we should get him. If we can't get him, trade back and get as many linemen as we can in the first round. That's what I want to do. That's all I want to say there. And thanks for everything, and good looking out.
You got it, brother. Thank you for calling, Raider, Gangster Raider. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Yeah, I mean, I understand where you're coming from, but until you start, you know, I just don't know where that ends. And, you know, you don't want to draft a guy in the first round and say, "Hey, look, you're not getting this number until you quote unquote earn it." I just think that's a bad way to step to start a relationship. I think it's more like, you know, you educate the player on, "Hey, this is the number. This is who's worn it," because not everybody, I mean, you know, not everybody has grown up a Raider fan or a Dodger fan or a Lakers fan to know like who's worn what number. You know, sometimes it's just what you wore in college or what you've been comfortable with throughout the course of your playing career. I do like I do like that the NFL looks like they're going to start allowing single-digit numbers for linebackers and defensive backs, and I think even defensive linemen. I think anyone that aside from a offensive lineman, and the reason the offensive lineman can't do it is because you want to make sure as the referee you know who's eligible to catch passes and whatnot, so the numbers are easier to distinguish that. Although, I mean, you know, guys are big enough, you should know. Although there's some tight ends that look like tackles these days. But anyway, I like the fact that now it looks like, non-skill players are going to be allowed to wear single-digit numbers. Because I just, you know, over the last few years, you watch college football and you get used to linebackers that are running around in single-digit numbers and defensive backs running around in single-digit numbers. Heck, some defensive linemen, for that matter, have been wearing single. And I think it looks good. And I think it looks sleek and cool. And then, you know, these guys get to the NFL, and this guy that you kind of watched for 2 or 3 years wearing number 2 or number 4 and looking all, athletic out there, all of a sudden they're wearing number 59, and it just doesn't look right. You know what I'm saying? Or number 37 or 36 or something like that in the defensive backfield. Let these guys wear number 1 and number 2, 1 through 9, and be able to, you know, sport those numbers. I think it's cool, and I think it's a good sign that the NFL is saying, hey, why are we driving a hard bargain on this? What's the point? Why not let guys wear whatever number that they want, short of the offensive lineman? I get it on the offensive lineman because, you know, the game moves so fast. You need to kind of know who's eligible to catch a pass or not. Yes, I know sometimes offensive linemen do catch passes depending on how the offensive line is formatted and positioned. But if you notice and you're at the stadium, the referee is going to quickly get on the mic and say, hey, heads up, number 74 is an eligible receiver on this play. You have to literally tell the referee, and the referee has to tell everybody else, and he's not just telling the fans and the commentators and the media. He's letting the defense know, heads up, because number 74, the way they're lining up right now, is eligible as a receiver. So make sure you keep an eye on that guy. I like the fact that they're doing that. I'm not quite sure about, you know, telling Jonathan Abram, hey, man, you don't get number 24 until you earn it. I don't know. It's the coaches have enough to worry about rather than, you know, worried about that and then being pestered by guys. Hey, have I earned it? Have I earned it? Have I earned it? You're either going to earn it or you're not. You're going to live up to it or you're not. And that's going to be part of that story. Hey, Jonathan Abram, you know, I could be writing a story 3 years from now with the Las Vegas Review Journal saying, you know, it was a rocky start, but Jonathan Abram eventually lived up to an illustrious number. Or, you know, he might be a footnote 2 years from now, and somebody else is wearing number 24 trying to live up to that image. So it's just part of everybody's journey. But again, a big day today. In Henderson, a couple of guys that, Arden Key, for sure, never quite lived up to the hype coming out of LSU. And Maurice Hurst, I thought he had a pretty decent year last year, not necessarily a difference maker over his career here with the Raiders. And now when you're talking about bringing in Solomon Thomas and Quentin Jefferson, and Darius Filon, I think David Irving, who got here late last year after the Raiders had signed him. He'd missed football for basically the last 2 years as an NFL suspension. Comes back finally off of reinstatement. The Raiders signed him. I want to say it was late October, early November, somewhere around that. And gave it a go, got on the field, to play in a game. But it's just a lot, man, missing football for that period of time and then coming back and expecting to just jump in and be able to perform at an NFL level. Your body's just not ready to rock and roll in that regard. It's almost impossible when you miss that much time. I mean, yes, guys are practicing on their own and working out on their own, but there's nothing like being in an NFL practice and an NFL environment and an NFL weight room and conditioning program and practicing day in and day out against fellow NFL players, getting your mind and your body right. It was just a lot to overcome for David Irving, but he absolutely showed the Raiders enough behind the scenes for the Raiders to say, hey, we like where this is headed. We want him around for another year and give it a go for another year. So don't sleep on David Irving. Don't sleep on Darius Filon. I've talked to people over in Henderson, and they feel like they got a little bit of a diamond in the rough in Darius Filon. We've talked about it earlier this week. This is a guy who was on his way, was a productive player, not a star player. Not everyone has to be a star player. But he was a guy that when he was with the Chargers, when you put him on the field, he made things happen. He gave you quality snaps. He was a productive player during his time, earned a nice contract and a nice pay raise with the Arizona Cardinals in 2019, goes over there, is expected to be a fairly big part of their defensive line, and then something happened off the field. It led to him missing the last 2 years. That's been all cleared up. It's behind him. It's officially closed. And now he's looking for a new start, and he found one here with the Raiders, who just so happened their defensive coordinator, Gus Bradley, was the defensive coordinator for one of the years that he was in Los Angeles. And so, there's a familiarity there. And I know just talking to some people over in Henderson, they feel like this is a sleeper. This is the guy that, if he's right, can be a good player for them. And honestly, that's all they need. The hope is that a Yannick Ngakoue plays like an all-pro player, plays like a Pro Bowl player, and is a factor and a game changer as a defensive end. The hope is that Max Crosby continues to get better, shores up some of the weak areas of his game, continues to be able to get to the quarterback and be more productive on a down by down basis. He's been what he's been, is the guy that hits some home runs and gets a lot of attention for hitting those home runs. But in his other at bats, the majority of his bats, kind of empty numbers, lots of strikeouts, lots of outs, not productive, not moving the run over, from one base to the next, not driving in enough runs, with a double or a single. It's a guy that just hit an amount of home runs that catches people's eyes, and you just automatically think because he's hitting home runs, he's a really good player. Well, that's not always the case. A lot of times home run hitters are vulnerable and a weak link in other parts of the game over the course of a season and the course of 500 at bats. And that's been the issue for Max Crosby. There's just been too many, not productive snaps versus a handful of productive snaps. He needs to, get that balanced out. And he's got the talent to do so. I know following him on Twitter, there's some things that he's been able to get fixed up, with himself physically and mentally and all of that kind of good stuff. Not going to get into it necessarily, but it looks like he's in a really good place in a lot of different ways, and that helps. And so if he can square away some of those issues, and we've talked about this before, I think playing fewer snaps is actually going to help him. There is a case from time to time with players of diminished returns when you're exposed as much as a player like he's been exposed. And when I say exposed, I mean just playing that many plays. He had over 900 and some odd snaps last year. That's a lot of snaps. And I think that hurt a little bit. I think if you can condense those snaps and he's playing at a higher percentage of the snaps that he's going to play at a higher level, then that's just going to make him a much better football player. So there's hope for that. There's hope that Clee Farrell continues on the path that he's on. Is he going to be a double-digit sack guy? If he can, you've got a real, real, really good player on your hands. If he can get to that point, he's kind of the opposite of Max Crosby. He delivers a bunch of productive snaps in his own way. It might not always look like that on the obvious stat sheet with the sacks, But from a, in a down in on down out and down out basis, he's more productive and he's delivering more productive and efficient snaps. Now, if you can couple that with a few more sacks, then I think the perception of him changes quite a bit. Not from people that know football, because people who know football understand this dude's a good player. But the people that kind of look at the home runs and not all the strikeouts, and just look at the home runs and not necessarily the strikeouts, and just look at the sacks and not, you know, all the other snaps where, you know, you're asked to do something and you're asked to be a an efficient and productive player. That's what he's been, but he can still get better, and I expect him to get better. And you know, now you add, Filon, Quentin Jefferson, Jonathan Hankins, and I know that it's, now that I think about it, it's kind of conspicuous that, you know, in doing some texting and whatnot with people in the know, saw Hankins' name a lot, not so much Maurice Hurst, so there you go. I think Jonathan Hankins is somebody that they still like. Not sure as a starter or as a reserve, that'll all be determined. But you know, if Jonathan Hankins is one of the backups, if Solomon Thomas is a backup, if Filon is a backup, if Irving is a backup, you're talking about some pretty good backups that are going to be able to help be part of a rotation that can be productive and more efficient. And we've talked about this quite a bit. If you can get a pass rush, if you can get better play up front, it's almost a guarantee that it's going to help the guys in the secondary. Far too long over these last couple of years, in spite of the better sack numbers in 2019 than there were 2020 from the defensive line, in spite of that, even in 2019, the defensive line was still a major work in progress. If you can get that group to a point where they are more productive than they've been and more ferocious and creating more havoc, you're going to see an improvement from the secondary, because what this secondary, this very young, still in development secondary, the things that they've been asked to do in spite of a defensive line that hadn't really been, you know, on a consistent basis, delivering the goods, it's tough. It's hard. If this defensive line is in better shape, and the Raiders believe it will be, that's going to help the secondary. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador. Keeping an eye on the WNBA draft, and keeping an eye on something that's about to go down, on whether or not the Raiders are going to be participating in in-person OTAs, the in-person phase of OTAs. I know a decision is in the books, but just waiting for an official announcement, and I'll let you know what I know when I'm able to do so. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny at 69187 or tweet at him at Vinny Bonsignor. This is In the Huddle with Raiders beat writer Vinny Bonsignor on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Good Raider Nation, by the way, some breaking news. The Raiders will not be participating in in-person the in-person phase of OTAs. Got wind about an hour ago of how the vote unfolded, and I'll have a story posting here in about a minute or two on what happened with some nuance. There was a push. It wasn't a majority vote. I'm just going to say that. But by the end of the vote, there was consensus among the players in which direction to move. And what they're going to do ultimately is repeat last year's all virtual off-season program. No in-person activities for the Raiders. They're citing COVID-19 as the reason for their decision. There will be accommodations, and this is all going to be in my story that's going to post here in about a minute or two. There's going to be accommodations for players who have salary that's tied into bonus money. If you remember, I talked yesterday about Corey Littleton and Carl Nassib and Derek Carr, and Corey, a few others. There's seven total players that have significant money that because I don't think in Derek Carr's case, but in a number of those cases, players, what they did was they restructured their contracts. And by doing that, you take part of your salary and convert it to bonuses. Some of those bonuses were workout bonuses, which are tied into OTAs and things like that, participation. And some of those guys had some significant money tied into that. And what their teammates are telling him is, look, if you need to go in to the building in order to collect your money, we're cool with that. So those type of players are going to be able to, you know, without any judgment from teammates, if you're rehabbing, coming back from an injury, or if there's any other compelling reason why you feel like, hey, I need to be in there and getting more on-field work in, players are going to be understanding of it. But collectively, I'm not so sure that this is a great decision at all. I think a lot's going to be lost as a result of this. I know that there's a lot of players that agree with me. But at the end of the day, the Raiders wanted to do this collectively in a unified front, and that's what they're going to do. So a second straight season for a young Raiders team without a normal offseason program. Not the most ideal situation, to say the least. But we're going to go out to the Raider Nation guest line and welcome in our really good friend, Evan Grote. Evan, if you're there, I don't know if you just heard what I just said, but your initial thoughts on the Raiders opting to not participate in the in-person phase of OTAs.
Yeah, hey, Vinny, how you doing? Glad to be on with you. And yeah, I'm just hearing this for the first time from you, and I quickly got on Twitter here, and I see the official statement that was put out on behalf of the Las Vegas Raiders players. And, you know, initially my first thought was what you just touched on. Here we go, another off season with a young team, and there's going to be no in-person OTA. So that's very concerning to me, because we heard numerous times about the fact that there were no off-season programs last year and how that affected the development of some of the young players, or maybe even some of the new players who were brought in through free agency on the roster. So I just hope that, you know, we're not going to go down that same road again. And one thing I will say, you know, it's hard to tell which players were on board with this and which players were not on board. I'm sure there were some guys who know how important it is to get into these OTAs and get those reps and get that time on task. But I don't want to hear any excuses this year when a rookie or a second-year player doesn't develop the way that maybe we would like them to develop, because you have an opportunity here to get in some off-season work, and you know the Players Association and the Raiders say they don't want to take part. So, you know, initially I'm a little bit disappointed by the decision, but I fully understand at the same time these players, they devote a lot of time and energy, and there's going to be an extra game played this year. And their bodies go through a lot of wear and tear throughout the season. So I do understand that aspect as well.
Yeah, and I think it's much more to do with that than it does with COVID-19. They're citing COVID-19 as per the NFL Players Association and the recent declarations made by other teams, the New England Patriots, the Detroit Lions, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Denver Broncos. But that's not why they're doing this. In fact, you know, there's a bunch of guys that have been working out over at the facility ever since it's been open, where you can go in there and get some weight room work in, supervised by the strength and conditioning coach. There's been players that are out on the field during normal business hours, which they're allowed to do. You can't have footballs out there, but you can get out there and do agility work and get work in as a group. Coaches aren't allowed to be there, but they're out there. They're at the building. They're constantly over there, to be honest with you. This is less to do with the COVID-19 and more to do with what Evan just talked about, which was the 17th game. Players aren't happy about that. And either this is, if you want to call it retaliation or a protest of that, or, you know, using it now as leverage to either revamp the OTA format, or maybe use this as leverage to go get something else that you want as a group. The union. So a lot played into it. But it is disappointing. No question about it, Evan, because like you said, this cost them big time last year, not having a normal offseason program. And now, as I put in my story, you've got a whole bunch of young players now going into their second year that will go into a second year without the benefit of an offseason program. It's a little risky, Evan, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and you know, I'm reading this statement right here. One of the things that they point out is, given the data and facts shared by our union about the reduced injuries and other health benefits of the virtual offseason last year, players from our team will not be participating. So, as you said, this is less about COVID. I mean, these players are getting together. Some of them, not all of them, are getting together out in the parks. We see that on social media. There's groups of players gathering together, working out together. So if COVID was the main concern there, then maybe they wouldn't be doing that either. So this definitely has more to do with, as we touched on, you know, maybe kind of putting up a front about this 17-game season. But there's no denying it. It's a major disappointment because we saw what not having an off-season program did to some of the younger players on this team last year. So let's just hope that, you know, that isn't the case again this year.
And it's almost ironic that the Raiders specifically would, you know, cite the company line of the injury factor. It just reminds me of our good Levi, good friend Levi from USA Today. And when he asked John Gruden last year, "Hey, down the stretch, are you interested in, you know, because of these injuries, you know, seeing some new faces or getting some young guys playing time?" He's like, "We've played like 100 guys already. I want less of the new guys and more of the guys that are supposed to be out there, but they couldn't because of injuries and all sorts of other reasons." So I don't know if the Raiders, how they figured into that accounting of the reduced risk in injuries last year. If anything, they bucked that trend. And I'm not so sure that I'd love to see those statistics. I kind of, you know, just off the top of my head, I'm going to almost disagree with those statistics, because if you just look at the Raiders, how many injuries did they deal with? There wasn't less injuries last year. There were more for them anyway, right?
Yeah, I would say so. They had their fair share of injuries, as well as players on the COVID-19 list as well. So, you know, I'm not quite sure. Maybe they're specifically talking about injuries that were suffered during the OTAs and, you know, prior to the start of training camp. That could be possibly what they're talking about. I doubt so. But, yeah, if that's what they're going to base their argument on, is that they had the facts show less injuries, I would say that we could make a strong argument that that is not the case.
No doubt about it. But I, you know, and in talking to some players, one thing that I can say is it's not as, and I'm looking at it from a strictly Raiders perspective here. How much it hurt them last year, a young team, especially that young defense. There was no secret why the offense was better. It was a veteran offense. The veteran players don't necessarily need OTAs, or they need it less, let's say, than the younger players. And to me, there's a reason why the defense struggled at way more than the offense. It was just a younger group and a newer group, and it came at some cost not having the OTAs, last year. But so from looking at it from a Raiders perspective, it's like, what are you thinking? You guys need to be out there. And I know a bunch of them know that too, by the way. So just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
But at the same time.
Let me tell you. Go ahead.
Yeah, real quick. But at the same time, there's other factors in play here that are above and beyond them as individuals. Every individual has a different story, a different journey. Each team is different from another team. But there's one common thread, and that's the Players Association and kind of what their big picture is in all of this. And at some point, you're part of something that's much bigger than you are. And I think that fits this category, this case this time.
Yeah. And what I was just going to say is trust me, I have a lot of experience. I'm a teacher. Okay. So, over the past year, we've teachers across America have had to go remote and teach on a computer. And let me tell you, there's no comparison between learning in person. You know, I'm a physical education teacher, so our courses are kind of hands-on. We're, you know, it's a physical education course. You can't do that sort of thing virtually. There's no replacing that. So what I'm saying is, you can go over all the film that you want. You can go over game plans and all that as much as you can virtually, but there's no substitute for getting on the field and getting those actual reps, those mental, muscle memory, repetition. That's how you improve. And again, there's just no substitute for that type of training.
Yeah, without a doubt. And so, you know, it is what it is. And I know that there was a fight to have a different outcome. I'll put it that way. But there's 53 players, and there's different. Again, everybody's journey is different. It's hard to get a consensus when there's five people, let alone 53 people. And you're certainly not going to get unanimous. And I know that there were players on the Raiders who saw this the way, you know, maybe I'm seeing it and the way Evan's seeing it. That the Raiders specifically, a lot of teams do, but the Raiders specifically, and a certain group of players on the Raiders, really need every second of work that they can get during this part of their career, this part of their journey. But that doesn't always line up with the collective and with the bigger picture of things. And unfortunately, they're kind of caught in the middle of something that is bigger than they are. But it is what it is. They're going to have to make the best of it. I know guys are still going to be able to get in there and weightlift. And there's a voluntary aspect of this where guys can utilize the weight room and the field. But they're just not going to be, and they're going to still, it sounds like everyone's going to do the virtual off season in terms of the learning and the Zoom meetings and all that. But the very, very key element, Evan, of taking what you learn in the classroom, and you know this as a teacher, taking what you learn in the classroom and then applying it on the field in preparation for what you're going to eventually see in training camp and games, that element is being taken out of it. And I don't care what the players say, what some of these older players are saying, I think you're taking a vital part of this process out. And I think that there's going to be repercussions from that. And I don't think it's a wise move. But, hey, if they get something in return for it, all the power to them. All right, Evan, let's talk about a more pleasant subject, and that's the draft, I guess, pleasant. You know, if you look at last year's Raider draft class, it wasn't all that pleasant, but there's plenty of time for those guys to get back on the right track. Looking ahead in a couple of weeks to the NFL draft, I've been posing this question. Are you set on the Raiders taking a tackle at number 17 to fill what is a very glaring hole right now on their offense? Or if there's a best player available on defense, even at a position where it looks like you've got coverage, maybe at linebacker, are you willing to kick the tackle can down the road a little bit and jump on somebody that you feel like could be a difference maker on defense?
Oh, I'm absolutely on the best player available train, or even a trade down scenario. That's what I would prefer to see happen here in a couple weeks. I think there's a lot of depth at the tackle position this year. You don't necessarily have to go out and grab one of the top two or even three guys, on the board if you're stuck at pick 16, especially if a stud should fall like a Micah Parsons. We're hearing a lot about him, and the more and more mock drafts that I read, I see him going to the Raiders, which is getting me quite excited, actually. But, no, I think that the wise move would be to, if you're sitting there at 17 and you don't have a trade partner, take the best player available. This team just needs impact players, especially along the defense, whether that's a Micah Parsons or a Koromoa out of Notre Dame. I think he fits what Gus Bradley likes to do. He likes fast, athletic linebackers that can cover. He's versatile. He can play multiple positions. So those are two guys there that I think would fit the bill as impact players there. And then I think you could find yourself a very serviceable plug-and-play right tackle in round two. I like the kid out of Texas. He reminds me a lot of Colton Miller, actually. Not as far as his body type coming out of college, he reminds me a lot of Colton Miller. He's athletic. He's fast, much like Miller was. So I like, I believe it's Tosmi is how to pronounce his last name. I like him. And there's several other quality right tackles that'll be available in the mid to round 3, 4, and even 5 in this draft. So I think they can wait on that and pick up some impact players elsewhere.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I have a story that's coming out, I think on Sunday, but it's hey, What about like a Micah Parsons at number 17? And then in round two, use maybe your 2 third round picks to move back into round two to get 2 second round picks, get your tackle and your safety in that second round. And now you walk away with 3 players within the first 2 rounds that fit some major, major needs. But, hey, I'm just playing, you know, shotgun general manager over here. I'm not calling the shots, but that's a scenario that I wouldn't rule out, too, is being able to get that defensive playmaker and then figure a way to move back up, perhaps into that second round, in order to get the highest quality players at tackle and safety in that second round. But we will see where it's all headed. Evan Grote, thank you so much for spending some time with us. A busy day today. Thank you so much. Don't be a stranger. We won't be a stranger as well. And we will catch up with you down the line, my friend.
Yeah, anytime, Vinny. Love coming on. Thank you.
All right. Take care, brother. Thanks to Evan Grote. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny at 69187 or tweet at him at Vinny Bonsignor. This is In the Huddle with Raiders beat writer Vinny Bonsignor on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Well, there you have it, Raider fans. What are your thoughts on that? No OTAs for the second straight year. No regular OTAs for the second straight year for the Raiders. I know that you know, there's fans on Twitter who are, you know, but with vaccinations and this and that, it's just the flu, COVID. It's not about COVID-19. Think bigger. Expand your thoughts. Expand your horizons and your thought process. That's the excuse that they are using through the Players Association. But this is really about something bigger, not, I can't, it's hard to say bigger than COVID-19, because really what's bigger than COVID-19, but specifically for the NFL and the players and the Players Association, this is more about a direction that the league is going in that the players weren't in favor of, and that's adding a 17th game to the schedule. Yes, there still might be some concerns over COVID-19, but trust me when I say guys are going into the building on a daily basis across the league right now. So this really isn't about any concerns over COVID-19, because if it was, players across the league would be not going into their buildings and working out in the weight room and getting on the field to work out on the field. And I can assure you that a bunch of Raider players are doing that to the extent that they're allowed to do it. So this isn't about any fear of going into the building. They know that there's protocols in place. They know that there's vaccines now that have curbed this quite a bit. They know that everything is going to be, you know, as up to date and as thorough as possible, just as it was when they went through an entire season last year. This isn't about concerns over COVID-19, no matter what the NFL Players Association has to say about it. This is about misgivings about a 17th game. This is about the NFL Players Association saying, we don't like that. You guys did it. You did it. You made that decision. And now we want something out of this. We want maybe an altered OTA program, a condensed OTA program. Maybe there's something else that they feel like using a protest, using skipping OTAs, and the threat of that can get them something that they want. I don't know what that necessarily is outside of maybe a restructured off-season program. I can't say that I know what it is, but it's going to be something. That's usually how this all works. It's a negotiating ploy. And I will say this. The in-house phase of OTAs, and I'm talking about, or the in-person phase of it, I'm talking about the part where guys can actually get on the field and start working on the field with coaches. That's what they're saying they don't want any part of right now. That's not going to happen now until May 17th. Anyway, it's been, it's kind of a like these guys are making this decision right now. That's why, again, COVID-19 isn't the biggest factor in here, because the part that they are worried about or say that they're worried about could be much better in a month by the time guys are allowed to start getting on the field with their coaches and everything like that. So this is about something else. But anyway, it buys the fact that May 17th is what we really need to be focused on as far as guys being able to get on the field. In terms of that, there's time still left to get this worked out to where players are saying, okay, we got what we wanted. Now we'll come back and practice in person like we normally do. So let's hope over these next 4 weeks, something along those lines happen. You're in the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador. When we come back, we'll keep an eye on the WNBA draft and see what the Aces are up to. And we'll talk more about the Raiders not being able to get on the field together as a team again, really until training camp. If everything that happened today stands, they're not going to be out there in Henderson as a team, just like last year, until training camp. I don't like the sound of that.